Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is episode 99 of the old of the Distraction Pieces podcast, isn't it? Yeah? I'm Scroobius Pip. Thank you for tuning in. I got two guests this week and they were an absolute joy. They were both quite nervous about it beforehand because they're not really into doing press. And as soon as you start listening, you'll be able to tell why. I jest, they were lovely and they're wonderful. They're two of my favourite people, David Earl and Joe Wilkinson. Now, David Earl has many comedy pseudonyms and characters. Brian Gittins and Steve Cumberland are two of Cumbo, are two of my absolute favourite comedy characters ever made. And Joe Wilkinson, of course, was Dan in Him and Her, which I think is a hugely underrated series, and is a regular as the beautiful Rachel Riley's assistant on Countdown, on 8 out of 10 Cats Does Countdown. I should mention speechdevelopmentrecords.com. That's where you can go to support the podcast and the label. The King Blues vinyl is back in stock at last, thank God. Not back in stock initially. That took a while. Blood Red King Blues vinyl. It's beautiful. Order that. There's also tons of great stuff in there. There's great music and merch from Sage Francis B. Dolan, A War and Peace, Polar Bear, Giacomo Brown, and my good self. I got stuff on there, loads of stuff, tons of merch, tons of beautiful things. We're working on some stickers, and I'm recording this a little bit in advance. Hopefully, when this comes out, I'll have my new cap available, because a lot of you were feeling that. I did a video called No Whimpers, a new song recently, and I wore the cap in it, and people are like, where the fuck is that hat? That's amazing, I want it. So that'll be out soon. But yeah, in general, you can buy Distraction Pieces podcast merch, Team 3W. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Anyway, on with this podcast. Yeah, I love these two guys. I was very excited to have them on. I've asked them both on in the past, and they're both kind of not got round to it. They both basically said it'll be the worst podcast you've ever had, but now they have a new TV show to promote and they could come on together. I managed to twist their arms into coming on, and they were absolute delights. I think they're hilarious and wonderful, and I've watched the first episode of Rovers, which starts soon on Sky One, and it was great. I love it. It's about we talk about all this, so I shouldn't go into it, but it's about a non-league football team essentially, and all the weird characters at that ground. Also, it bears mentioning, of course, how could I forget this, that we launched a new podcast on the network last week, podcast on the network last week called Say Why to Drugs with Dr. Susie Gage, and it got an appropriately huge reaction. So thank you very much for that. Yeah, absolutely amazing. Each episode, Susie, I'm on the first five episodes, and each episode she sits down and we discuss a different recreational drug each week, and she gives the facts and she dispels myths. Again, sometimes it's dispelling anti-drug propaganda, sometimes it's dispelling pro-drug propaganda. It talks about, and you have that both ways. You have stuff saying the evils of weed, for example, and she'll talk about that and which ones are true and which ones aren't. But then equally, again, this isn't pro or anti, it's facts. And she'll equally talk about all the things of, a glass of red wine a day is really good, and all this kind of thing. And it's like there's a lot of pro-alcohol stuff that isn't accurate, and there's anti-alcohol stuff that isn't accurate. So yeah, that's the basis of this podcast, Say Why to Drugs with Dr. Susie Gage. I urge you to download, subscribe, and get involved and support the Distraction Pieces Network. But yeah, check that out. Also, obviously, Tuesday Night Jaw. I'm back on Tuesday Night Jaw at last. So yeah, that was pleasing. And that's exciting. So check Tuesday Night Jaw out. Check out Say Why to Drugs with Dr. Susie Gage. Tuesday Night Jaw with Jim Smallman. And Say Why to Drugs with Dr. Susie Gage. All on the Distraction Pieces Network. And this week, all featuring me. Ha ha ha. Let's get on with the podcast, shall we? I'll be back at the end to maybe tell you who the guest is for the 100th episode of the Distraction Pieces podcast. This is episode 99 with David Earl and Joe Wilkinson.
Distraction Pieces. This piece of fiction is the intro to destruction. This piece of fiction is the intro to destruction. This piece of fiction is the intro to destruction. This piece of fiction is the intro to destruction.
What's your lie?
It's all right.
It's all right.
So, so.
Yeah.
I think I got that. I think we started rolling just as you spotted his ass crack. So,
And you said you don't edit.
No, we don't edit. So that's the perfect start. I'm joined today by Joe Wilkinson and David Earle. It's the first time I've called you David Earle. When we toured together, I would only refer to you as Brian best I could. Because I'm like that with people. Like, DJ Yoda hates me calling him Yoda because he doesn't like his name, but it's all I'll call him. I won't call him Duncan. Fucking Duncan.
Well,
like,
I did
Duncan.
Here we go. I've got an anecdote straight away.
Straight off the bat with an anecdote.
So your confidence is up now.
Welcome.
I'll save it. It's not good.
Go in. Let's have your anecdote. Come on.
I did this gig in Brighton when I first started, and I emailed the promoter. I said, look, my name's David.
Yeah.
And can I be called David, please? Not Brian. And, that's fine, absolutely fine. So I got to the gig, and she put a poster on the walls, please call Brian David, everyone.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
It's big, that's intense. That's
Come on,
that's
mate.
The pressure on.
Needed a bit more from that.
No, that was a great anecdote.
I was a bit panicking because I knew where it was going.
Would it be possible for you to pop that in an email for me, just so I can...
I was hoping it added
to my anecdotes.
Oh, just so I can appreciate it properly.
Basically, put a poster on the wall.
Yeah. Excellent, classic poster anecdote. Tick that off.
A long hour this, isn't it?
So, you're both here today because you've got a TV show coming out. I mean, I'm going to get into... I always kind of talk about how you started and other things over your career, but let's kick straight off with Rovers. How's it been putting it together, and what was the starting point, and where did you go with it?
It's been amazing, and it's been like a... bit of a dream come true to do a sitcom.
It's on Sky, right? And they seem to be doing really good at just getting new British sitcoms and pushing them through and making them. There's been a few over the last year that I think, it's not something I knew particularly of Sky in the past, but they seem to be at a point where they want to get good new British comedy and make shows with them.
I think that's a shit show.
No, shows.
Come on, mate.
and make bad television.
Why they've been brilliant to work with, haven't they?
Yeah, they have.
Yeah.
Really kind of given us free rein.
And it's helped having Craig behind it.
Yeah.
Craig Cash.
So who came up with the idea? It's about a non-league football team, which is a beautiful thing to focus on, because the beauty of, if anyone listening has ever been to see any non-league football, they'll see how realistic all the ridiculous characters are in this. But if you haven't, then you'll just feel this is clearly... people aren't really... I like this, but if it felt hilarious. But as said, it felt I've seen all of them characters at local football and things like that.
Yeah, we tried to make it as well. Everyone's based on someone we know, and we tried to make it as realistic as possible. Because when you're writing something which potentially a lot of football fans will watch,
but you don't think anyone's gonna. You don't think it's gonna get made.
No, no.
The main guys. Named after my decorator.
Yeah,
so I'm kind of regretting.
Kind of forgot to change that, didn't we?
Yeah, call him Meat Pot. Yeah.
He must have been honoured to get that.
Does he know?
No, he's left.
Oh, we'll find out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whose idea was it, and how did the process work together, like between the two of you?
I was on holiday and having some cheese and bread.
Excellent.
And I said to my wife, I might text Joe Wilkinson, see if he wants to write a sitcom. And I did.
Yes.
And
he did.
He really did.
I said, I'd absolutely love to.
So we got with the first idea we came up with was kind of like, it was on a pier.
Right.
This cafe on a pier, and we thought, I actually spoke to Rupert Magendie. He said, it hasn't got a hook, guys.
Yeah, and it's already been done.
Yeah. And...
we're watching a man into the other room. We're distracted.
Podcast gold.
I don't know how we came up with the
Because we sort of had some characters from the first idea, didn't we?
And then
we kind of started, because I don't know, when you're writing stuff, you end up talking for about 2 hours about what you have for breakfast or whatever.
Yeah.
So most mornings we'd talk about football.
Yeah.
And I guess we sort of went, It's the only thing, the only other thing we like.
I know about.
it's football. And like. Football. The only things we talk about are football and comedy. Ladies. No, you know, chicks.
Yeah.
Chicks and cool stuff.
Yeah. Chicks and Game Boys. And so we're like, well, then it's sort of just, you know, you sort of go, oh, yeah, and then go, oh, we could, and you sort of go, oh, there's nothing in it, and you don't know how we do it. And then eventually you sort of, you know, you stumble on stuff, don't
yeah.
you? You know, I'd love to say there was a sort of, we'd had this seed of an idea. We hadn't. We had nothing.
You had some characters.
And you don't know what you're doing. I've never written anything before, so it's...
That's amazing. Then, right, it's the first well, thing we were like, and it's actually got made and insane. Turned into something.
Well, I mean, we made the pilot, which they liked. We just thought we'd hit treble 20 straight away.
Yeah.
We
yeah.
thought the next
yeah.
script was going to...
Well, we said, you know, you sort of go into it and go, well, if you sort of analyse what the chances of stuff getting made, you wouldn't do anything, would you?
Yeah, yeah.
You'd just sit at home going, oh, it's pointless.
It's not worth it.
But then we sort of have got a bit fascinated about how lucky we've got to actually get something away.
Yeah.
When you kind of... do the sort of maths on how hard it is. So we kind of, yeah, we feel like we got really lucky, but Sky and Craig really... Craig sort of, we sent it to him, didn't we? And he got back to us and said he liked it, and we were like, well, that'll do.
Yeah.
We didn't think it would go any further than that. It's like...
That's that.
Yeah, frame that.
It wasn't a waste of time.
No, exactly.
Yeah. Now we can get back to our lives.
Yeah.
We called the radio commentator Owen Niblock.
Yeah, which is a guy...
And that seemed to win him round.
Yeah, that... Yeah, that's what he said, didn't he? He goes, oh, I thought I'd like it because you called the radio guy Owen Niblock. That was only by chance.
That won him over, perfect.
Yeah.
What I like about it as well is that it really... I mean, I'd never thought about the kind of mentality that you have to be a Sunday league or a small football club football sport and turn up each week and chant and sing. Because if you're at Old Trafford and there's tens of thousands of people singing, it's easy to have that bravado and get in it. But if you're standing on the sidelines it's and no insane. One else is singing, it's just you going, go! Go!
What was the game we were at?
We went to see Scrinston against...
Whitstable.
Whitstable. Wow.
Yeah,
classic.
Well, everyone. Yeah. You were probably there.
But there were like eight blokes in the
it
corner just
amazing.
Battered.
Yeah.
Sung for 90 minutes, didn't they? Oh, we are the Oyster Boys, Oyster
go.
Boys, Oyster Boys. Like that, for 90 minutes. And we were like, and it was, that's right, they were in the distance, weren't we? We were like, oh, they look a bit leery over there. And then we're sort of going, oh, God, I don't like the look of them, because they're in the distance. And they got up close, just a bunch of middle-aged men, plumbers and, you know, just normal blokes who just for 90 minutes have been going...
Oh, the Oyster Boys.
Yeah,
the
Oyster Boys.
You know the Oyster Boys.
Everyone
knows the Oyster Boys.
Nonsense, they're ridiculous. We're like, that's just insane.
Amazing. So when you were writing, every time I try and write anything, anytime there's a cool character... I'm instantly thinking, I'll play that. Because that's how you write.
Yeah.
And you've, I mean, cool character is the loose term, but you have given yourselves the cool characters.
It's loose, isn't it?
Yeah. Come on.
Yeah. Comparatively,
they are the cool characters.
Well,
they are the ones that are a bit...
That's not why...
They're kind of looking down at everyone and being a bit cool. And so how was that? How was that thinking, this is our slot here?
Well, I thought they were like the biggest knobs. Because if you're walking into a club with 11 people thinking
you're strutting in,
you've got some serious issues.
That's it. That's the beauty of it. It struck me as a very small town British version of that scene in Dazed and Confused where Matthew McConaughey struts in and they're playing The Hurricane by Bob Dylan, and it's the coolest slow motion bit, and the comparative thing was you two bowling in with your leather jackets on or whatever.
Yeah,
I mean.
a lot of denim.
All right, guys, in your denim.
Have you seen American Movie?
Yes.
It's based on Mike and Mark.
Right.
It's kind of loosely based.
Yeah.
So the hair and the beard and the denim.
Yeah.
And you've gone for a goatee in this one. Was that a big decision?
It was a big decision.
you just felt sexy, didn't you, with a goatee?
But, I mean, in truth, we didn't give our characters much thought.
Well, the truth of it, we shouldn't say this, but we'd got so caught up in all the detail of the show. You know, we were worrying about the script and how, you know, all these 100 things you have to do in the first week. And then it was like, okay, guys, you're up next. And we both went, what? Oh, what?
Do
I don't know.
Well, you strut, mate. I'll copy it.
You strut. Just strut. I can't just strut. Just strut. And the characters were born that's through perfect. Panic.
Yeah. Because you've played Brothers before in Derek, of course, and you were Kev as regular, and you came in the second series, was it?
As is
even more. Yeah, broken and creepy.
Cliff.
A brother, so Cliff.
Cliff.
Yeah. I'm glad that you struggled to think of his name, because I was thinking, oh shit, I can't think of his name. So if you can't even remember, I don't feel too bad.
Yeah, well, I'm 41.
So how was that? And how was it to be in Derek? Because Ricky is a fan of you and has been a fan of I believe he was a fan of Gittins as a character for a long time, wasn't he? And basically put Gittins in Cemetery Junction, right? It was effectively...
Well, the first thing I did was... It's really weird. I was writing on a website, Jim Field Smith's website.
Yeah.
You know Jim Field Smith?
No.
He directed Stag and...
He was in Dutch Elm, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
But I was writing for him, and so I made this short film about a monster hunter.
Yeah.
And he said, I'll send it to my agent. So I sent it to his agent, and Ricky and Steve were in the room when he received it.
Timing.
So they said, I'll stick it on. And they liked it.
That's amazing.
Yeah, so it was this character, Graham, that he first liked.
Yeah.
And he kind of wrote my part in extras based on Graham.
Yeah, yeah.
And then did Brian, and he liked that. And yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah.
See, because the two of you are responsible for two of my favourite characters in British comedy. In Brian Gittins and in Dan, in Him and Her. Just a massive fan of both. So how did Dead Gittins come about? And while we talk about that, I'm going to first say that I think my favourite thing on the internet is the recording of the rap track of Brian. I sent it to a few people last night. As we were doing this, I was like, I've got to pop that on. In fact, anytime I'm having text conversations with a few different mates of mine, if we say something that we agree on, it's right. That's it, mate. Keep it simple. exactly, mate. Keep it simple. Yeah. So how did Gittins as a character come about? And it started off with Angelos as well, wasn't it?
Yeah.
There was a lot with Angelos.
It was way before Angelos. It was, I sat in my flat in Brighton and I stuck the video camera on and And it was and it sort of came out. And then originally he was one of those guys that goes around festivals sucking shit out of the toilets.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
One of those guys.
You're wearing them. and then he'd come home and get dressed up as a clown and just express himself, which is pretty similar to my day job at the time.
Yeah.
And then... I made another little short with him. It's kind of like Fred and Rose West documentary. It was just a bit weird. But I sent that to Ricky. And when you get these little moments where he goes, yeah, that's funny. He goes, oh, is it? Oh, okay. I'll keep doing it for a bit.
I'll develop that.
Yeah. And then I was kind of told to go on the stand-up circuit. I was like, oh, fuck's sake. But I'd always been sort of interested in,
You've always struck me as someone who hates doing stand-up.
Yeah, I do.
I loved it. I'd seen you. I can't think who it was. I think it was the first time I saw you was Stephen Merchant was doing a little dry run of his first stand up tour, I think.
Yeah,
and it was at Bush Hall, I think.
Yeah.
It was you and Chris Addison and Stephen, and I think that was the first time I saw you. And then I saw you a few more times, and then I was doing a spoken word tour and asked if you'd come along, and without fail after every one you'd come off stage and apologise to me, which was wonderful. But
cocky bugger.
the beauty and the paradox of creating a character like Brian, who is essentially a bad comedian, that's what he's meant to be. The beauty is if you absolutely nail it, you leave the crowd a bit confused
and
not sure if it was funny or not. But that's when that's the perfect reaction. But that must be a crushing thing as a performer, that you're going out of there and the high you're trying to reach is confused indifference. And I mean, then you're like, yes,
yeah,
I've nailed my art.
I don't know what it, I don't know if it's just a safety blanket, but yeah. I want it to go down well.
Yeah.
So that's,
yeah.
You know, that's the main aim.
Yeah.
But if it doesn't, then it's like, okay, if I fully commit and ruin the whole evening.
Yeah.
But then it's quite selfish, isn't it?
It's the beauty of the fully committing. And it's a weird thing because I've had Richard Herring on here and been on Richard's podcast. And the thing with Richard is he revels in the awkwardness if a gig isn't going well and really enjoys those awkward moments. And I don't think you do.
No. There's part of me that does and part of me that I hate it.
Yeah.
Because I've ruined someone's evening.
Honestly, one of my highlights of touring was when we did the Garage and it was...
Is that in Brighton?
No, in London. So it was 700,
yeah.
I think, all standing, everyone a bit drunk. And you had your closer, which is one of my favourite things, where you put masks on. I won't spoil it, but everyone's dancing.
I've been doing 8 years.
And one person just wasn't doing anything. And there was just such pain in your voice as you were just stood there screaming as the Birdie song plays, just going, just do something, anything.
That's just me, you know.
It was just so beautiful as they weren't reacting. It was the big finisher that if they do anything, it's hilarious, and they weren't doing a thing. And just seeing you screaming.
I know.
I was in tears.
Yeah, yeah. I don't, you know, I've got to a point where you start thinking, fuck me, is that Brian? What's the character here? Where's the line?
Where's the line?
It's slightly uncomfortable now when I do. But about a year ago, I was doing the, just do it, please. And I got slapped around the face on stage.
Oh, really?
And I just lost it. And damn. I totally, you know, you fucking, fuck's sake. And like, my wife's in the crowd just, oh, God. So I come off stage. Just feeling a bit grubby and do I want to do this?
Yeah. But it's brilliant. I love
it. I've got a gig tonight.
You've got a gig tonight. Perfect. And again, not to keep overhyping and going on, but I do recommend people look at a lot of the Gittin' stuff on YouTube and that. Because the thing that made me realise I think it's a truly great and observed character was one of the videos I've watched avidly from beginning to end is Brian Gittin's just going through the keys on his key ring.
Oh, yeah.
And if something as mundane as that can just be endlessly entertaining, I was like, that's a character there. That's because I could watch Partridge do that. And there's certain great characters I'd happily watch them just talk through the keys on their key ring. But there's a lot of people I wouldn't happily watch.
I appreciate that.
It's wonderful stuff. But what is the plan with live performance? Because you've stopped for a bit. And then I think the problem you've got is you've got some people like Gervais and others who are massive fans. And I think it seemed like there was a point that you'd grown tired of it, but other people were really into it, kind of against your wish. Like, I guess I've got to keep doing this.
I don't know. Because I did a gig last week and I enjoyed the moment being on stage. I find it so embarrassing.
Yeah.
Like standing up there and just basically getting your cock out. And I was gigging with Kerry Godleman. We were sort of in the green room. She said, once you've been away from it for a period of time, you realise it's a mental illness.
Yeah.
And it really is. It's just, why am I getting up here? Why am I doing, why am I at home?
When you're touring constantly, it's like, this is what happens. This is how life is. This is work.
Yeah.
And when you step away and come back and go,
what am I doing?
That was a weird thing to do. That was a weird thing to do with my Monday evening.
Yeah. I started picking on a guy with arthritis.
Was that during the gig?
It was.
Was that separate? Just on the way home?
Yeah, I don't know. I battle with it.
Beautiful. Well, how did him and her come about? And how did kind of moving into acting? Because you were a similar one, that your stand-up that I saw, it wasn't a typical stand-up. It was quite...
Didn't tend to work.
It was quite weird and just... It wasn't like, here's a joke. It was like, again... Yeah. Similar, it was quite an unusual, it was a performance on stage rather than, or a character on stage rather than, here's Joe with his jokes.
Yeah, basically Stefan, who wrote Him and Her, kind of saw me in Edinburgh, I think, if I remember rightly, and he said, I knew he was writing a sitcom for the BBC, and that's all I knew about it, and then I got asked to audition for it, and I'd done two auditions, and they hadn't gone well. Really, like, I'd had to phone my friend Diane Morgan afterwards and go, look, I've just done this thing, this audition, and it was horrific. And she went, yeah, yeah, that's them.
That's how auditions go. Yeah.
I was like, I can't do that. I said, I'm not going to do that again. It's horrible. And then Stefan's thing came up, and I went in, and I sort of did it, like, quite tragically.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I just sort of read the part, and I was like, I'm not going to try and make this funny.
Yeah.
I just did it really, really sort of tragically, like this kind of, this sort of twisted sort of person based on someone. I basically did a gig 2 weeks before, and this guy came up to me. He's quite a big guy, which sort of made it quite, which is who I based the character on. He was quite a big guy.
Yeah.
And he came over, and I could sort of see him in my sort of peripheral vision, just sort of stand there. And you could tell he wanted to come over and say hello or whatever. And eventually he came over and he went, I thought that was really good. And then he just turned away as quick as he could because he was sort of looked like he was waiting for me to go, oh, fuck off.
Yeah, yeah.
That's how he sort of approached me.
Yeah.
Because he was such a big guy, it felt even more sort of tragic.
Yeah.
And then I got chatting to him, and then I nicked his sort of
his mannerisms. But,
I just basically sort of based it on him, and that's always what I had in my head with the character. He's just waiting for someone to tell him to fuck off.
Yeah,
basically. And then in the audition, that sort of played it. I kind of didn't look up and sort of looked at my knees all the way through it. And then and I remember afterwards that it was different because they sort of hadn't hurried me out of the room. Like the other two auditions. That's all right. And then they said to me, I had this sort of seed in my head that it had gone all right. And they said, oh, what else have you acted in? I went, I haven't done anything, done nothing at all, nothing. And as I was saying, I was going, what are you doing? No, no, I never acted in anything, nothing. Nothing.
You don't want me, mate.
No, yeah, basically, nothing at all. And walked out. I went, oh, that was ridiculous. And then didn't think about it. And then a couple of months later, they sort of said I'd got it. And then afterwards, I'd found out that Stefan had recommended me to the director.
Yeah.
I know. He'd recommended that I'd go to the audition. Yeah. And that's who he kind of wanted me to play it. And then the director sort of said, he'd liked it. And then they sort of agreed. But if I'd known before, I would have been going, well, what's he seen me do?
Yeah, yeah. So, you'd be thinking of, I need to recreate
what you saw. Yeah,
him, yeah.
But luckily, I didn't know that, and then, that's basically how it came out. But it was. I've always been very proud of being allowed to be in that.
Yeah, I think it's one of the most. Obviously, it's highly praised, but I think it's one of the most underrated things the BBC have done. I thought it was fantastic. It was one that I think the first series started, and I kind of didn't really notice it. I ignored it. I didn't think it'd be my kind of thing. And then my brother recommended it and then just binge watched. And just absolutely so well written, so simple and so restricted.
Stefan's a very clever one. He was so young when he wrote the first. He's in his 30s now.
Yeah.
I found out, but he was like 28.
Yeah.
And he wrote it on his own.
Yeah.
And I kind of like, people come up to you and they can congratulate you for the show. And I always say I'm very proud to be involved.
Yeah.
But Stefan is the
master.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah. So it's kind of such a clever guy.
But again, it was, and that's great to hear everything you said there of how the character came about, because there was something instantly engaging about how Dan was in general a character to walk on and try and have their moment. And Dan was kind of the opposite. He'd walk on and try not to make as little impact as possible as a character, as a human as well. Just be really...
Well, yeah, that was kind of...
Barely on the screen. And that just made it so engaging. You're like, well, who's this guy?
Yeah, well, me and Stefan sort of talked about, like, in sitcoms, like, characters have aims, you know, like the objectives. And his was to stay around people for as long as possible. Which is it like, and so his way of doing that was to try and be invisible.
Just try and blend it, just into be the background.
He just wanted to be near people. And
there are episodes where you will kind of forget he's there. He will just pop up again later.
Yeah. I think they'd go like 15 minutes and then he'd go, ooh, ooh. And that was, and then he'd sort of go, oh God, I might get kicked out now. Oh no, I've ballsed it up.
It's brilliant. And then how good was it to see them
develop that character, because to get a love interest and stff like that was, again, that, it must have been great, because I had Michael Soccer on the other week. It was in This Is England, a Being Human, actually, which was on around the same time
with Russell, as
him and her. And what I thought was interesting when I was talking to him was we realised, which he hadn't particularly realised at the time, but everything he'd done, he'd been cast as like a character for a few episodes and just ended up sticking around and growing. And it felt similar to that. It felt like Dan was very much a background character, and gradually it was like you needed him. You were waiting for his points, and then the sadness of his aggressive relationship, and you were all, you became protective of him, which is great for comedy. And I think Gervais and that are great at doing it as well, in having genuine, really subtly, and suddenly you realise you generally care about that character, even if it's a ridiculous character.
Yeah.
You're suddenly like, well, no, leave him alone.
It's funny,
like,
actually, because when we were doing Rovers, I was sort of, leading up to it, I was ringing Ricky up to getting advice. And, and one of the main things he said was, just try and make sure that the audience care about the character. Don't worry about laughs. No one laughs at a sitcom. You might just go,
But
you've got to get them to care. So that was the main...
So did him and her influence your writing on this? Because I said, if you had these great scripts, and I always feel that's the best way to learn how to do rather than get a book that's telling you how to write scripts, read some amazing scripts and go, that's good. That's how you write a good script. Did that, and similarly with Derek and work with Gervais and that in general, was that a similar thing there? Did that influence the process?
You sort of break it down, don't you? You break down what they've done. See, you know, you go to good stuff and you go, how did they do it?
How did that work?
Yeah, well, why is that really good?
Do it loads.
Yeah. Try and place what makes it...
Yeah.
Or what's making it connect and what's making it great.
Yeah, just pull it apart and...
Yeah, definitely. And just being involved in... Because it's literally the first thing I did, the only things I've done. But it was like kind of just being dropped into something so good by chance is, you know, it's a pretty good sort of start.
Great,
where you
right,
go,
isn't it?
You pick stuff up, don't you? You've just been four series.
It's the beauty of timing on things like that. And similarly that you'd just sent something and Gervais and that happened to be in the room. And similarly there that the first thing you get after you've said, I ain't done anything, I've done nothing. It's like you're suddenly, but you're there because of how you performed it on that day.
Yeah.
And that was by chance because you'd met someone. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's just crazy, all those things that then it's like, wow. Because again, you kind of assume as a watcher, as an audience member, that, well, this must have been a long road to get to here. Or even you feel, I could never do that. And I think it's inspirational. And I don't mean to say this in, if you guys can do it, anyone can do it.
It's true.
I do think it's important to have these discussions, because it is true. It's like, well, it wasn't something that you had this career path and then this leg up. It's something that just happened and it worked and clicked. So it
I was driving a van delivering building tools. Very well, I might add.
Well, you weren't that amazing at it.
This morning? Was that this morning or?
No, straight.
No, I was very good at it. So I made this little short, and suddenly you're getting calls from, you know, I just didn't understand what was happening.
Yeah, and it's really bizarre, and I think social media's a great one for this, for putting people in touch. It's bizarre from the outside to realise how new or how much the people that you're enjoying don't know what's going on. Do you know what I mean? Like, having seen your stand-up show, I've come to see Gittins numerous times before I got in touch, and it was only when I was sitting down for ages going, oh, hang on, we're playing some quite big venues. I could ask someone I'm a fan of, rather than thinking, you know, oh, here's who has to come along. Do you know what I mean? It was a weird one there. To me, I was like, this is an amazing show. It's unattainable. I was like, oh, hang on, this could work together and we can do these things. So you always have that view from the outside. And I remember it with Sage Francis, who's a musician I've been a fan of for years and years. And then there was a point in our career where we started to get a following, and we sent him an email to try and to see if he wanted to release our record, and he did. And then you realise, all right, he's just a human as well, who's looking at other people going, how are they doing that? This is amazing. Whereas as if you Do you know what I mean? I'm wording this really appallingly, but if you're detached from something, you don't realise that this is just regular people who are also going,
how did I get here?
Yeah, I think there was definitely a point where I went, oh, right, yeah, it's just a bunch of people, isn't it?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Everyone. No one, you go, well, you know, they're not real.
Yeah.
You know, everyone's just sort of going, oh, God.
Yeah.
Yeah,
no one knows what they're doing.
No one. That's absolutely the key.
Well, look at us.
No one knows
us right now.
Knows what they're doing. That was a beautiful thing for me on the TV show I'm doing at the moment, Taboo. When the first teaser trailers came out, the Fox one came out, and it said it was a trailer, and it said coming in 2017, and the BBC one came out, and it said coming 2016, and I thought, they don't even fucking know what they're doing. And that's Fox and the BBC, and they're as going, oh, when's it come out? When's it going to be finished?
It's like, I'll put that 17 was on.
Genuinely a beautiful thing to go, all right, well, no one knows what they're doing, really. We're all stumbling along. So how was it to work on Derek? Because that was a really... I absolutely loved it. It was a hugely risky thing, I think, on Ricky's part, of portraying that character in such a manner. And I think he nailed it, because it was... with a warmness, and it wasn't a let's laugh at a disabled person. I think it wasn't that at all. It was let's laugh at Kev and at Carl's character and things like that. The butts of the jokes weren't that person. It was like a let's look at the beauty and humanity of Derek and kind of laugh at the ugliness of everyone else.
Yeah, it was great. It was it's just one of those moments where you don't know how you got there.
Yeah.
Really, sitting on set with Ricky and Carl and Kerry.
Yeah.
Not so much Brett.
I was going to say, not so much Brett.
No, yeah. I just don't rate him.
It's more, I wonder how he got here.
Yeah.
It's more, you wonder who let him in.
Yeah, that's Brett Goldstein, by the way.
Yes. Who you were in Super Bob as a postman.
Yes, I was a 3-second postman in Super Bob.
Was wonderful. I mean, it'll warm you to know that I also filmed a 3-second bit that got cut. So, so at least you were a fucking 3-second postman. I was on the cutting room floor. Unbelievable.
That's made my morning.
But yeah, again, it was kind of... It was another one, again, that I think Gervais does so well, of writing genuine warmth and genuine emotion in there. But the beautiful part in that respect was... Kev became the bit that makes you appreciate the genuine warmth and genuine beauty, because he was just crass and horrible and disgusting.
And obviously he stuck that thing on at the end, the scene at the end that hopefully makes you go, oh,
yeah,
he's broken too. And But no, it's great, and there's so much freedom to... Like, I guess the average script length is sort of 25, 30 pages, and Derek was coming at 15 pages, and
just
might say Kev comes in and does this. What? What does that mean?
Got to fill 4 pages.
Come on, mate.
Give me something to work with.
We're 10 short here.
Yeah, but it was lovely. It was just a lot of playing, and obviously he's a brilliant audience as well, because if you get it right, he'll laugh. You know when you're getting it wrong, so it's just silence.
Yeah. That didn't work.
But yeah, it was great. It was great. And it's just, he just gave me a ring and said, I'm filming this thing called Derek in the autumn. I've got a part. Do you want it? But then you start shitting yourself and you're like, oh no, am I going to ruin his...
Careers are easy, aren't they? They're just, Gervais just rings you up, says, I'm shooting this thing. Do you want it? Yeah, why not?
You're making yourself really hated.
Oh, dear.
I'll start with Joe on this. Like, growing up, what comedy were you into, and did you always think that you wanted to go into comedy, and was it stand-up or acting or writing? What was the kind of motivation?
Football and comedy were the only two things I cared about, really.
And what football team?
I'm a Gillingham fan.
Of course you are.
Yeah. So that kind of did help. We were in Writing Rovers, actually.
Yeah.
Huge amount of disappointments.
Yeah.
But I think me and David have spoken about this. You watch comedy and you kind of go, oh, that's great. And you sort of see stand-up. You know, I used to love stand-up. I love sitcom.
Yeah.
Anything. I used to watch anything that was on, basically.
Yeah.
But you don't, like, any normal person doesn't go, yeah, I'll do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll do that. It's an insane way to think.
It's mad because they should, though.
Yeah, that's absolutely.
The bit that's
yeah.
key. That's the bit that's key. Well, yeah. I had Ed Skrine on, who's in the Deadpool and was in Ill yeah. Manners, and he had his mantra, which was the most popular part of the podcast, which was just, why the fuck not?
And, well, and he says it on everything. I could have been told, you know, it could have been sort of handy.
It was just like another world, though, wasn't
yeah.
it? When you,
yeah.
It's like...
Yeah.
And it's the first time you realise, oh, that's just some bloke yeah. doing that. I could yeah. do that. It'd be different, because I'm different from that bloke, but still, why not?
Yeah. But I guess I didn't even sort of think... I didn't... Not though... I don't know if I sort of even thought I might want to do it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It was yeah. like sort of... Like you can't just like wanting to be a house. You know yeah. what I mean? I can't be a house.
It's not really it's not really comprehendable, is it?
Yeah, you go, oh, you know, I've got love a couple of windows and you yeah. know you can't what it's does that mean?
Happen,
yeah, it's not gonna happen. So
it's just not gonna happen.
I'm not gonna be a house and I'm not gonna be anything incompetent.
I mean never give up your dream, but
you know, I've still got a lot in me and I think I could be a house.
Start at a bungalow.
Yeah. Work your
you
way
never
up.
Know what's ahead. You never know what's ahead.
So I don't think it was sort of like I sort of sat there going, why can't I do it? Why yeah. can't I do it? It was just like, oh, it's like, you know, I just enjoyed it. And then, we both didn't sort of start. We started really late, like yeah. stupidly, like, what is the point late?
Yeah.
And so it took me till I was 30 to sort of go. There was like a stand-up club at near where I was living in South yeah. London. And I just went along a lot. And watched it, and then a guy who'd run it sort of went, "Oh, do you want to have a go?" And I was like, "Yeah." And then he sort of booked me in for the. It was like 6 months away because there's such a long waiting list to get on open spots, and it literally ruined that year for me.
Yeah, because you're
thinking
just
about
concerned
it.
Over what you're yeah. going to do, how you're going to do it.
Looking back, there was like seven people in, and I did it, and you know, I threw up and stuff. I genuinely threw up and
oh wow
and then you just sort of go, oh, I'll do a bit more of that, but when I was sort of 15 you don't sort of go, oh yeah, I'm gonna sort of work towards that. Well, how do you start working to there's no because no one in quite a lot of the people that I've met doing sort of stand-up or anything there has been someone in their life
yeah
that has inspired yeah,
I wanted
them
to be this person
yeah
and so forth.
But they've actually done something, do you know what yeah. I mean, in entertainment, you know, they've like they might have a great auntie that was a singer
yeah.
or something. So they feel like, oh, right, and it's sort of anyone can do it.
Yeah.
But if you haven't got, if there's no one in your sort of life that has ever done anything in that world.
You can't see the route.
You can't see
that.
The route, yeah. yeah. You don't, where do you begin? I don't, you know, like, I know it's now you've done it. You go, oh, right, yeah, just have a look around. And
yeah, I think even in it, though, it's a case of stumbling upon the right platform for your particular style or whatever else. And I felt... when I really started to notice you and become a big fan was from panel shows. And right. I think Sean Locke's a great example. I think his stand-up's great, but I think him on panel shows is just amazing. It's just it's the perfect format yeah. for his kind of wit and his kind of humour.
Yeah,
I think it's next level.
Yeah.
So how was that when you started to get on panel shows and then going down so well, really, that you then became a regular part of 8 Out of 10 Cats Does Countdown.
I got lucky with that as well, if I'm honest.
Yeah.
It's all, basically, you, when you first do them, yeah. no one knows who you are, so there's no goodwill.
Yeah.
There's none.
That's
basically.
The tough thing. That's what Josie Long was saying
right.
When she's on, is if you're new, even from the crowd... They're not prepared yeah. to laugh at you. They're going to decide if they're going to laugh.
Yeah.
If they know you, they're ready. They're like, let's go on, say something.
Yeah.
Every time, if they don't know you, they're like, who the yeah. fuck is this?
Yes, exactly.
It's just like a sitcom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Same thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so you kind of, I did the first one and the first thing I said worked.
Yeah.
And so the rest of the show went all right.
That's perfect.
But
what
it was only. It was about...
Come on, mate.
Oh, it was absolutely amazing.
Yeah, it's gold.
It was about the...
Being at house.
Yeah, my want of being at house. Probably weren't far off something. I can't remember. I genuinely can't remember, but it worked. And the rest of the show went all right. Yeah. But I only said four things, basically.
Yeah.
So I came off and I went, oh, well, I'll never do that again. Like, I was like, well, what a shame. Well, you've done one. You can always say you've done one.
Yeah.
And
but did all of those four things make it in?
Yeah.
Because that's where it's weird as well is it's all in the edit. Is someone could be talking all night get four things in.
Well, because John Richardson said to me, I was like, oh, shite. I was like, oh, well, never mind. He went, no, that was good. I went, oh, he said four things. He went, oh, they work, though, and it's only 24 minutes, so anyone ever gets four bits.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, really?
Great.
And so I tended to say four bits every time, and then I'd have a little thumb through a magazine for the rest of it.
Just sit back and relax.
But, yeah, total luck, though.
Got my four bits in early. Yeah, yeah. Enjoy yourselves, lads.
Yeah, cardboard cut out of me, looking forward. Yeah, so I got lucky with that, and because I then went on to do others, and I just saw people having that moment where it didn't work.
Yeah.
And then the rest of the show was torture for them.
Who?
Right. Give me a bit of pad and paper. But not that they were bad or anything, it's just that first moment has got to be really good.
Yeah.
And then they go, oh, he's funny.
Yeah, he's all right.
Oh, I'm going to laugh at him. Or they go, oh, he's shite.
So how nice is it now on, like, Ten Cats does Counter, for example, that you're established and you don't have to have that moment of winning them over? You get a big intro every time. You get your big
come on. It bloody helps.
Yeah. And then you get to
But it's like stand-up and stuff. It's a really weird stand-up because it starts off, like most jobs. If you start off as a plumber, you do all the sort of easier plumbing jobs. You learn, and then you get with stand-up, they go, right, here's the hardest room with the worst audience
and
the worst setup.
Yeah.
And you're the worst you'll ever be with the worst material. Go, and you're like, well, of course that's not going to work. And then
how is that ever gonna
work? Yeah, it's terrible. And then you get better, and you go to clubs that are set up better.
Yeah.
And the audiences are expecting to laugh. Because, like, the open spot circuit is full of, like, disheartened fans, you know, comedy fans who are going, oh, I think we've gone to the wrong one.
Yeah. I think that's important, though, and I think that's key. Like, when I was starting off, I gigged everywhere in the country before I gigged in London or Essex, where I'm from, because I want to just have all my mates there going, it's brilliant, he's the best thing ever, and you get that false confidence. I wanted to go out there and go, if they like me, I want them to like me just because of what it is, rather than having any previous connection or commitment to it. And I think that helps, right? And that's what the comedy scene is based on, essentially. Everyone seems to start off having horrible, horrible gigs. Mm. Some people continue having them.
Regardless of how nice they are.
No, but yes, do you feel that was kind of, looking back now, as horrible as it must have been at the time, do you feel that kind of sturdy, it made you a sturdier pair of legs to stand on?
I don't think it's useful. I think there's so many gigs that, looking back, were harmful and are harmful for new comics.
Yeah.
Because, like, you sort of go, now you go in the room and you go, well, this is unplayable.
Yeah.
There's four people, it's big, then no one's looking, it's in the corner of a pub, and there's people in this room who don't want to be listening to comedy.
Oh, and so, here comes a hen party.
Yeah, exactly. And you go, well, it's actually going to just knock your confidence, especially when you're new.
Yeah.
So I sort of think it's a bit of a myth.
Right, that's interesting.
You know, there are, you know, you've got to learn to do it, but I don't think it should be horrible.
It shouldn't you know, be horrendous.
You know, I'm sure some brilliant people have stopped because they've, you know, as you say, like Hindu turned up and ruined the evening.
And
you blame yourself.
Yeah.
You do, you just blame yourself the whole time, and then you sort of learn a bit more and you still blame yourself, but there's also other factors of it that are out of your control.
Yeah.
But that tends to be the open spot circuit.
Particularly early on, I guess. I've mentioned this before, but I always liked, I think it was Stuart Lee that used to reassure anyone that wasn't laughing that all his work is funny and he's been to a lot more comedy gigs than them, and he can assure them that whether they're enjoying it or not, it is very funny. And there must be a level of that in reality as well. If you've gigged a lot, that when you do get them rooms that are just unplayable, you can now know, I'm not just shit. I know this works. Mm. You know, no,
still knocks your confidence. It does still knock your confidence. Weirdly, it does still knock your confidence. Yeah. You know that it might not be your fault, but there's still a bit you go, oh, I am probably shit.
I should have done better. That's interesting. I'm going to go back to David. Can we talk about Cumbo? Because it's another character that I think is just fantastic, and just from the first one that I saw, it's just so horrifically well observed of and like describe Cumbo. He's kind of an
he's a cool guy. He's a cool guy. He's he's just a lonely guy in his early 40s and
who's trying to be kind of young and hip and
And
it works perfectly. And he's started his web series and talking about his life and all the cool things he gets up to and the and the ladies and the nights out, and it's just so like you can't watch it and not cringe, but it's so engaging. So yeah, like where do characters in general come from for you? Is it a case of just put the webcam on?
He must be a part of me.
Yeah.
Which is really worrying. Yeah. Because I can do him with ease.
That was the beauty of seeing that, was he's so far from Gittins to the point that it's unrecognisable. I remember when, I think it was my mate Amy came to one of the ones on our tour and saw you outside and was quite disappointed. And there's a compliment coming here. Yeah. Was quite disappointed that you're a handsome man. And she was like,
"See, oh, so,
and it was. We were like, but Gittins is this weathered, withered, horrible beast of a creature. And it's like, well, no, you're a good looking guy. So it's weird when Cumbo was then this. Hey, like cool hip and it's such a weird combination.
I think actually where he came from, I saw this, what's his name? Oh, it's this guy on YouTube, he's amazing. Anyway, he would, he's got like 200 episodes, I have to send you the link.
Yeah.
But he's just constantly dancing and singing. And it's so much energy. I was like, you can't get bored of this. I can watch this for 10 minutes. Don't care what he's saying.
Yeah.
Just want to see more dancing. See sort of energetic, moving his ass. And
hype man.
Yeah, so that's where he came from, this bloke.
So with Cumbo and with some of the Gittins stuff on YouTube, do you script much of it? Or is it, I've got an idea of what I'm going to do, I know the character? Because with Cumbo in particular, it feels like, the more around the houses he goes and the more dragged out it gets to get to his point, the better it is, because that is the nature of it. It's
Well, I did the original stuff. I didn't, you know, I just think, okay, he's gone to basketball training this week, so let's see what he says about that.
Of course he has. He's a 40-year-old man. Of course he's gone to basketball training.
Yeah, and they really like me. But the latest stuff, I have tried to make it, take a bit more time over it.
His laugh as well, for some reason his laugh, it's just gets
Cliff Richard. That's Cliff Richard.
Don't slag off Cliff Richard.
No.
But yes, so what is there ever a plan when you start any of these characters? Because Gittins became it was on one of the Channel 4 shorts, like you did a one-off Gittins thing, which I absolutely loved. And again, it had that same thing of it wasn't cynical and nasty, which it's so easy. I think with stand-up and with everything, it's easier to go, let's just kind of look down our nose and be cynical and shitty. But similar to Derek and other things, it was warm, and there was a warmth to it, and a.
Oh, Brett and I were so aware that he's pretty inaccessible, Gittins, and we were kind of like, when we're starting, how are we going to present this man? And
I mean, he's a horrendous man.
Well, the thing is, it depends what mood I'm in.
If
I'm in a good mood on stage, he's tremendous to be around. Yeah. But if I don't want to be there, then it's all about what mood I'm in. So. So when we did Gittins, we were like, okay, let's make him accessible and warm, and hopefully people will care about him. And we were trying to make the people that come into the taxi, the freaks. I think we went too far the other way, to be honest. Now I think I could have been a bit of a cunt.
You could have been a bit nasty,
but
more evil. With the stand up shows of Brian, how much do you build a set or structure a set, and how much, because again, I've seen you loads of times and seen numerous different variations. I don't think there's ever been a time where like that's his current touring set, if you know what I mean. It feels like there's always quite a there's loads of different things going on. Is it kind of a here's my current set, or is it a let's get up there and see how these pricks testing
go? Well, what are you doing tonight?
I was texting friend Chris last night going, can you remember any of my jokes? He just sent deformed boy. Well, I don't know the setup of that, mate.
Right.
That's a punchline. And He said something about a goose in a box.
Yep.
Don't know.
No idea.
But no, I mean, I've been running my own night in Brighton. What's been really nice, I haven't written any new material for about a year, so I've just been getting on stage with nothing.
Brilliant.
And that's been really good fun.
Yeah.
So.
And how was it doing the game show?
That was great.
Nights, because they were great. That's where I met Paddy Considine. Yeah, it was me and Paddy Considine, and I'm a massive fan of Paddy, and he's come on the podcast now and all that. So it was
great fun.
It was a great night. Only reason I agreed to it. But again, it was great fun because it's a live game show.
I really enjoyed that. That's probably the most I've enjoyed any kind of live performance, because it was just a gang up there. And I think it was Ben Norris said it was like five of the least likely men who should be on stage. There's no reason for them to be on stage.
I know it's taboo to say any of their jokes on a podcast or anything, but the end game that you played, I think, was the most genius and built genuine tension of just essentially it was just taller or shorter. And you'd go along the row of people play your height right. Higher or lower. And it was just absolute, because genuinely it's like, oh, this is a bit of fun. And then by the end you're like, no, he's definitely shorter. No. Just a bizarrely engaging and wonderful that gets the whole crowd involved. No way!
Nicer end than when you had me up there. Do you remember what you did?
What was the end of
the horrible ending you had me doing? You strapped me face to face with Paul McCaffrey, where our little bellies were touching, and then you made us do some stand up.
Yeah, I wanted to see what their material was like, sort of in the cold light of day.
It was horrible.
Just really face to face, strapped.
Hello, everyone.
Yeah, to do the 2 minutes of stand up strapped to your friend. It was horrible.
That's horrendous.
It was genuinely horrible.
Well, we're coming up to the hour mark, so I'll start to wrap things up. When does A Rover's start, and what's the process now? Because you must have been hugely intense to get it together, to get it made, to be. Were you heavily involved in the casting and stuff like that? Because the cast is amazing as well. There's like some great people in there. So you were involved in all elements there?
Yeah, we were really lucky that way.
Craig's just, he's all about the writer, and you know, he'll give you his opinions, but whatever you want, he'll try and make it happen. And
the cast was kind of a combination of people we knew and found very funny and some people that Craig recommended.
What's the name of the guy that runs the club shop, because
Mark Silcock.
It's great, because I'd seen him do stand up a few times, he was, I think he was on the game show with you. He was security, wasn't he? He's just wonderfully engaged.
He did a self tape, and it was worst audition. And we were just like, get him in.
He had four lines, and he made 31 mistakes. Brilliant. Like there wasn't a line he read properly, but it was the funniest thing.
I love it, because I saw him. I did my club night at the Bedroom Bar, and upstairs at the Bedroom Bar was a comedy club. And
Was that the comedy cafe? I think so.
So that was kind of going on as we started downstairs, and then when they finished, we took over upstairs. So just we'd get to watch whoever was on, and he went up, and it was exactly that of like, What's this guy doing? And by the end, you're just in love with him because of how bad it's gone, but how wonderful it's been as well. And just genuinely some great gags in there, but also just his general manner and demeanour and awkwardness.
He genuinely didn't seem to give a shit. He really doesn't.
He's the real deal of, like, not giving a shit. Like, he's the proper real deal.
I went up to him. We were just about to do one of the scenes on the first day, and I said, okay, we're about to do your scene, Mark. Right. Have you read it?
Show me.
We're just about to film it, mate. Looked at it.
Show me. When he came in for the
show me.
When he came for the table read, I was like, hello, Mark, how are you doing? He goes, yeah. I don't think he knew why he was there at that point. And then we gave him a script. He went, who wrote this?
I love it.
That's why you're here.
I love him. He's amazing.
He was so funny, though, wasn't he?
But it must be now that kind of exciting and horrific time of you've done all the work and now it's about to happen.
Well, we're kind of aware that 90% of sitcoms flop, so we're prepared.
It's a weird one. it's terrifying. It's really, you don't, I think when you write it and make it, you don't actually let yourself imagine it's going to be on telly.
Yeah.
You know, you're kind of going, well, yeah, it won't actually, it'll never actually be on telly, so don't panic. And now it's going to be on telly, you're like, oh, yes.
So what's your, like, when you were writing as well, if, as you just said there, if you're aware that 90% of sitcoms flop, I think the key to the ones that work is just some great characters.
Mm.
So do you focus on getting these great characters, or do you focus on getting, oh, we need these gags, because the gags, I don't know, it's a weird one. The best sitcoms are ones that, oh, this is a really weird thing, but ones that went on for a long time, they tend to be, because you get to know the characters, yeah, it's allowed to grow,
yeah,
it's allowed to develop.
Yeah.
So it's that weird trade-off of, do we focus on the art of it, or do we focus on what will get us through to the next round, essentially, to use football analogies, to, yeah, try and to try and get through to that,
yeah,
at that next round, rather than focus on building a squad that will, yeah, that will keep you going, right, for seasons, yeah, and seasons. See, I'm not,
yeah, no, yeah, this is great analogies.
You're welcome, guys.
Yeah.
Well, the characters sort of grow, and yeah, you understand them more as you write it.
Yeah,
there was like Steve Spears' character Tell, we didn't quite nail until the sort of fifth episode, and then you go back and
rewrite
because you go, oh, that's what's funny.
And
so you, only by writing it, they sort of come alive, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
You can't really sit there and go, I think he's quite funny because you sort of have a general idea, and then you write and you go, oh, that's what he's like. And so it's quite organic, I think.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
and then hopefully they're good, a good set of characters.
Yeah.
That, you know, and then you, the jokes sort of come later. With,
yeah, yeah. So what's ahead? I've still dodged. I refuse to let you answer when it starts. I asked that and then spoke. So, yeah, so when does it start, and where can people watch it? And
24th of May on Sky One, 10 o'clock.
Brilliant.
Yeah. But I think it comes out on, what's the play, I think? What's the,
I don't know, Now TV or something?
No,
Now
no,
TV.
No. The, you know, like,
On Demand.
On Demand. Right, Sky On Demand, is that what it's called?
Yeah.
A week before, so that's
brilliant.
The 17th.
That's nice. Yeah, that's nice.
So it's like a,
yeah,
it's online. Is it online? It's on.
It's on your Skybox. If your Skybox is set up to your internet, then you can watch it on demand from the 17th. But it actually airs live on the.
This is much better. This is how. That's exactly what I meant to say.
No, that's great. So what are your plans? Or when it's airing, are you going to be avoiding the world completely out of nerves? Are you going to be watching it together?
Are you going to be watching it?
You've got a gig.
I've got a bloody gig.
Look at you. You're the real one that don't give a crap. You're like, whatever.
Moved on.
Oh, is it the premiere tonight? Yeah.
Can't make a bastard.
Yeah.
I watched it on demand last week.
Yeah. You're having champers on you.
Oh, this is horrible. Why do you have to be? My missus, we've got a bottle of champagne in the house, which we got given for our wedding.
That's what you should be doing.
Well, it's nice.
It was just, she said, oh, we'll have that champagne and that. And I went, no, we're not doing that. I'm going to have a breakdown that evening.
Yeah.
And I went, no, I can't. Because, you know, I just feel, you know, there's so many sort of like, people might hate it. And she shouted at me and said, we're having it because it's been the last 2.5 shitting years of my life.
Yeah.
You just banging on about this one thing. So she wants to have a glass of champagne.
And
but
again,
I want to have a breakdown.
But that's great, because when you're in the middle of a project and when you've been working on something for so long, it's easy to step or to lose the reality of it.
Yeah, that's.
And the fact is, something that you guys have written...
Sorry.
You just smashed into the
mic. Sorry.
In my big ending monologue. No, but the fact is, and I had the exact same thing of a few guys, like when I was coming up in music, a few of us had gigged together a lot, and it was like Kate Nash and Adele and Jack Peñate, and all people who've gone on to be far more successful than me, pricks. But I remember messaging each of them when their albums came out and just saying, just take a minute to go,
yeah,
you've got a record in HMV. Because all of them, in the process of getting towards their first album, had got so hyped that it was like, is it going to be in the top 30? Is it going to be in the top 10? And that's all that mattered.
Yeah.
But the fact is, regardless of anything else, and again, I love it, so I think it's going to go down a treat, but regardless of anything else, you've got something that you wrote and it's going to be on TV, exactly. And you're in it as well. It's like, it's a double whammy of that's your baby and you've created that.
She's absolutely right, but I will refuse to.
But I will,
and you're
have
right as well, yeah, but I will have a breakdown.
So where can people keep up to date with you guys? Are you on social media? Are you... What's the best way to see what's going on?
We're kind of putting links and trailers and things on Twitter.
Yeah.
You've got a Facebook thing, haven't you?
Yeah.
I'm terrible at this.
I mean, it's a hell of a campaign from the sounds of it.
We're doing an open top bus round.
David's got a Facebook. You've got a Facebook, haven't you?
I say the other day? I said...
Joe's got a Twitter.
I said a YouTube the other day. got me a lot of abuse. I meant something was on YouTube, but I said a YouTube.
I was once in a mate's a wedding in America, and they're having a barbecue the day before, and his brother-in-law or brother-in-law-to-be just said, "Have you got YouTube in the UK?" We're like, "Yeah." And he sent us about a video. He's like, "Right, go home, Google YouTube, and then look at..." He said to Google YouTube and then search for this video.
Can't I just type in you?
No, can't no. I just go, no, Google YouTube. Beautiful misunderstanding. But what is your Twitter? Yours?
Gillingham Joe at... Oh, no, it's not that, is it?
At Gillingham Joe. We got you. And are you on...
At Brian Gittins 1.
At Brian Gittins 1. Don't forget the one.
It won't work otherwise.
And then just look it up in general. Or Google. Google. Or Googling Rovers isn't going to be any help, is it?
No. How do you sell stuff?
It's hard, isn't it?
I don't know.
It's embarrassing.
Tough. Yeah.
I mean, if it was a massive hit, then I'd be shouting it from the rooftops.
But yeah, no, but right now, you're meant to do that to make it a massive hit. I think you've got this a bit confused.
So it's genuinely so odd, but thank you for letting us come on and balls up your podcast.
No problem at all. Thank you very much. And what's ahead? Obviously, this has been 2 years of your lives just kind of focusing on this a lot. Have you got other things lined up or planned?
All the old HBO things are ticking over nicely.
That's understandable. Again, it can be the fact that you're so you can be so like one project, particularly with TV, because it can be so slow moving to get through all of the stages and all of the processes.
Yeah, well, we were just honestly, it was a dream come true, and we were like,
we put all our eggs in that basket.
Yeah, we just wanted to. We didn't want to have any regrets at the end, and go, well, we tried.
Tried. Forget it.
So it's been
we tried really hard.
Please watch it.
So needy, but honestly, we're not joking. Please watch it.
Well, that's perfect. Well, thank you very much for coming on and chatting, and I look forward to everyone thoroughly enjoying Rovers. Right. Cheers, guys.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Scroobius Pip's Discretion Pieces.
There we go. What a lovely pair of gentlemen. I was worried it might descend into just mockery and lightheartedness as the Brett Goldstein and John Drever one did, which I recommend you check out if you enjoyed this one. And my drunk casts obviously do regularly. But we managed to keep it professional, I think. It was a bit cheeky. There was a few points that we made some jokes in the room that probably didn't translate without being there. The point where I joked about some people never getting over those shit gigs, I looked over at David. That's why we had a bit of a laugh there, and I realised that wouldn't actually translate because you weren't in the room with me, were you? Thank you very much for tuning in. I told you I'd maybe tell you the guest for episode 100. But I lied, because I'm not going to tell you. But it's obviously going to be very exciting, isn't it, to get to 100? Or maybe it isn't. Maybe I don't give a shit about numbers. You'll have to tune in next week to find out. Episode 100. We've done 100, man. That's crazy. I need to take a moment, actually. I was going to end there, but I need to take a moment to thank you guys for all the support. Obviously, thanks to the sponsors. But, I mean, the sponsors wouldn't keep coming in if you guys didn't support the sponsors, if that makes sense. So, even if I'm thanking the sponsors, I'm thanking you guys. But the fact is, we've done 100 episodes. I mean, over 100 episodes, if we're honest, because of the parts ones and parts twos and things like that. But 100 episodes, and there's not been a single week where we haven't had an episode. There's never been, oh, there's no podcast this week. It's been consistent for this long. And the support has been consistent as well. It's not like we have these big drop-offs. It's like every week we're now getting over 100,000 downloads a week. And you guys just support and support and spread the word as well. That's the beautiful thing is seeing on my Twitter, the amount of people just supporting and tweeting constantly. The Kathy Burke one recently, man, that has been lighting up my Twitter for weeks now. And again, that's all you guys. I've been crazy busy these last few weeks filming. So I've not been able to push the podcast as much as I normally would, I guess. But you guys have been doing it for me. Just huge reactions, huge responses. And word of mouth, you've always been great at spreading the word, pushing it out there. There's a podcast that you're excited about. You seem excited to tell other people about it, which is a beautiful thing. So thank you very much for that. And it's grown into a network, man. We've got Tuesday Night Jaw. We've got Stop and Search, which is the amazing drug law and policy panel, live panel podcast with Jason Reed of Leap UK. And we've got Say Why to Drugs with Dr. Susie Gage, which I've mentioned a lot, but I genuinely think is going to be of great importance. I think these are important podcasts that will be saved and can be used as reference, because it's not pro-drugs, it's not anti-drugs, it's pro-truth and anti-bullshit. On the little sting, I say it differently. I say pro-truth and anti-myth, but I didn't want to offend people. But fact is, it's pro-truth and anti-bullshit, so that's true. Thank you very much for tuning in. I've rambled a little bit at the end here, but I'm genuinely amazed that we've got to 100 shows and you guys just still keep killing it for us. Check out Rovers on Sky One, written and starring David Ell and Joe Wilkinson. It's well worth your time. Thank you all for tuning in. I'll see you next week. 100, baby.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.